WGXC is a listener-supported community radio station, and it is also a new platform for presenting innovative experimental works on the air. Tune in, WGXC 90.7 FM, Agra, Hudson, Catskill, and points beyond. Listen to special programs of performance, words, sounds, and other rare and delicious items. Transmitting the arts all day every Saturday and weekdays after midnight. Here is there. Radio lives on in our minds.
You are listening to Human Machine, a program which airs each Saturday on WGXC 90.7 FM. Research in various fields examine the speculative next stage in human evolution, in which technological and human architectures will continue their deep convergence. Here we will present weekly works on the horizons of the human machine. It was impossible for me to distinguish among my pain and difficulty in breathing, the flapping of the window curtain, and certain as yet unresolved points of the potential problem on which I was working. I cannot say that the pain revealed itself as a mathematical tension, or that the mathematical tension symbolized itself as a pain, for the two were united too closely to make such a separation significant. However, when I reflected on this matter later, I became aware of the possibility that almost any experience may act as a temporary symbol for a mathematical situation which has not yet been organized and cleared up. I also came to see more definitely than I had before that one of the chief motives driving me to mathematics was the discomfort or even the pain of an unresolved mathematical discord. I even became more and more conscious of the need to reduce such a discord to semi-permanent and recognizable terms before I could release it and pass on to something else. All around me, inside me, flowing through me, between me and others, it is easy to discern signs of the flexible, mass marketing of cybernetic delirium. This is a delirium associated with both cyber products and cyber experience. It's hard to do the ritual of the checkout line these days, without some magnetic cyber commodity connectors wrapping their seductive senses, cheek to cheek, in feedback loops with yours. Commanding attention, inviting a try, not that the effects are homogeneous, nor the possibilities, from cyber sex shopping surveillance, to cyber philosophy, and even utopian dreams of cyborg revolts, whether for fun, or out of desperation, flaming desire, or for want of more passionate and politically effective connections. The world around and within me appears increasingly mediated by a kind of delirious cyber hyphenation of reality itself. This is a short, sociological story of the history of this hyphenated world. This story revolves around the delirium of Norbert Wiener, the so-called father of cybernetic perspectives on physical and social reality. Today, Wiener's delirium has become our own. My suggestion is this, that for worse and for better, we are today virtually all struggling to survive and communicate if differently and in different modes within the hegemonic exigencies of cybernetic culture. In what follows, I wish to suggest an even broader use of this term, cybernetics, not simply as a field of techno-science research and application, but as a term connoting the most far-reaching of ultra-modern forms of social control. In this sense, I will be using the phrase social cybernetics to provisionally configure the fluid, high-speed, and densely layered webs of communicatively driven positive and negative feedback which, this very moment, affect the ways you are receiving my words. This is a story of how loops of cybernetic feedback are informing the energetic ritual organization of power between ourselves and others. Within the fast flexible boundaries of global capital, the most dominant, but certainly not all, of these feedback loops carry a masculine, heterosexist, and racially inscribed charge. This is a history of the present, decented, as loops of communicative feedback may appear from within various localized scenes of capital. Cybernetic control practices today guide the hegemonic marketing of both meaning and material survival within the bodily confines of a cruel, complex, and contradictory socio-economic system. Increasingly, this system capital in its ultra-modern or cybernetic mode is incorporating the entire world as its parasitic playground for profit. I make this suggestion, not to further existing loops of communicative feedback, which make the televisionary marketing of paranoia fears and fascinations big business. Instead, this is to join in some minor way, with others, in encouraging a heterogeneous affinity of collective, energetic, and power-sensitive efforts to reflexively double back upon and, thereby, better, theoretically, converse about, as well as jam, subvert, detour, and, by any means possible, contribute to the ritual transformation of the violent and sickeningly hierarchical order of things in which I find myself writing to you. Partial and provisional transformations, transformations in the direction of ritual organizational forms which are more just, more life-affirming, and more loving. The word cybernetics derives from the Greek term cybernetics, referring to mechanisms of steering, governing, or control. The term was first used with reference to human engineering by MIT mathematician Norbert Wiener, during and in the years immediately following World War II. Perhaps deliriously, it was, after all, a time of war, first hot, then cold, and, as Paul Virilio astutely observes, a culture of war is also a culture of delirium, a culture where the ordinary tools of perception are suggestively, ritually, magically, spectacularly, technologically, almost hallucinatorily, retooled. Wiener was somewhat of a child prodigy and Harvard PhD in mathematics by age 19. He was also a pioneer in the application of statistically based nonlinear mathematics to problems of circular causation and self-adjusting feedback. As part of the war effort, Wiener collaborated with Julian Bigelow and other mathematicians and scientists, gathered under the auspices of the MIT Radiation Laboratory, directed by Warren Weaver of the Rockefeller Foundation. This lab was a high priority, D2 section, project, under the command of the National Defense Research Committee. Wiener and Bigelow made innovative and unprecedented complex use of ergodic theorems and integral equations, in what has been described as a revolution in computational communications engineering. During the final years of the Second World War, this revolution triggered significant advances in the design, production, and strategic deployment of anti-aircraft guns and precision bombing equipment. After the war, it would change an entire way of life. Wiener and Bigelow's innovative mathematical labors were themselves in a complex and militarily mediated loop of communicative feedback, with other exponential leaps being made at the same time in both computing and telecommunications. Many of these advances were made possible by the refined development of the vacuum tube. Nevertheless, in Wiener's account of these events, it is clear that it was the context of war which hastened the production of the cybernetic imagination. Though the vacuum tube received its debut in the communications industry, the boundaries and extent of this industry were not fully understood for a long period. The sporadic uses of the vacuum tube and its sister invention, the photoelectric cell, for scanning the products of industry, for example regulating the thickness of a web coming out of a paper machine, or for inspecting the color of a can of pineapples. These uses did not as yet form a reason new technique, nor were they associated in engineering mind with the vacuum tube's other function, communications. All this changed in the war. One of the few things gained from the great conflicts was rapid development of invention, under the stimulus of necessity and the unlimited employment of money. At the beginning of the war, our greatest need was to keep England from being knocked out by an overwhelming air attack. Accordingly, the anti-aircraft cannon was one of the first objects of our scientific effort, especially when combined with the airplane detecting device of radar or ultra-high frequency Hertzian waves. The technique of radar used the same modalities as the existing radio besides inventing new ones of its own. It was thus natural to consider radar as a branch of communications theory. Besides finding airplanes by radar, it was necessary to shoot them down. This involves the problem of fire control. The speed of the airplane has made it necessary to compute the elements of the trajectory of the anti-aircraft missile by machine, and to give the predicting machine functions which had previously been assigned to human beings. Thus, the problem of anti-aircraft fire control made a new generation of engineers familiar with the notion of a communication addressed to a machine rather than to a person. If the problem of anti-aircraft fire is a problem of goal-directed communications, for the emerging science of cybernetics, its solution lies in the notion of regulated feedback. In cybernetics, the principle of feedback is, aesthetically, imaged as the operative force guiding a contingent world of beings in reciprocal energetic communication. For Wiener, this occurs in both animals and the new high-speed computing machines his mathematics helped bring into being. Each makes use of sensory organs and magnetic memory devices. Together these operate to produce ongoing comparisons between past and present exchanges between information and energy. In humans and other animals, this involves what Wiener described as a kinesthetic sense, which keeps a record of the position and tensions of their muscles. In the new computing machines, this function was handled by a combination of data scanning and taping devices. But in addition to logging an ongoing comparison of inputs to goals, cybernetic feedback processes involve something more interactive, a reciprocal flow of two-way interaction between controller and controlled. This operates not only to communicate influence from the former to the latter, but also to communicate back the results of this action. This image of interactive feedback strikes me as, at once, perverse and utopian. On one hand, it celebrates the control of some subjects over others. On the other, it decenters the communicative practices these subjects use to exert control within a dynamic web of interactive feedback, shaped, in part, by the communicative actions of those being controlled. In other words, cybernetic substitutes for a simplistic one-way command model a vision of message sending and message receiving subject objects, each mediated by the agency of communicative practice itself. This is an agency of letters, icons, and moving pictures. Don't be surprised if you here find resemblances between cybernetics, with its imaginary of decentered communicators ensnared with inflowing webs of scriptural, textual, and textual feedback, and the image of social life offered by certain versions of post-structuralist theory. Cybernetics and post-structuralist thought emerge in related, mid to late 20th century, historical times and spaces. Neither is genealogically innocent of the other, neither materially, nor in the imaginary realm. When read critically, each also suggests, potentially, reflexive power-sensitive images of sacrifice and repetition. The command, control, and communicative possibilities of cybernetics are rooted in the repeated sacrifice of other ways of being in and communicating about the worlds we are in. This makes cybernetics a restrictive economic practice. It sacrificially banishes other possible worlds for the purpose of provisionally fixing, stabilizing, and communicatively controlling the boundaries which stake out the contingent world of which cybernetics is itself constitutively a part. Cybernetics also seeks to monitor, regulate, and modify the dynamic loops of feedback governing this contingent world's continuance and its change. In cybernetics, the material effect of dynamic flows of feedback is the ongoing informational shaping of some worlds, to the statistical reduction of others. In this sense, there is also more than a bit of existentialism guiding Wiener's cybernetic imaginary. But, then, Wiener, like Sartre, was writing to combat what he discerned as the deadly freeze framings of fascism. In contrast to the reductive and homogenizing violence of fascism, Wiener pictured cybernetics as offering a dynamic image of communicative exchange between heterogeneous beings, energetically scanning, monitoring, reading, interpreting, and adjustively responding to one another, all the while reproducing, modifying, defending, resisting, yielding, penetrating, and or blurring the boundaries between themselves and others, these others now appearing ecologically, as if environments, as if spatially, temporally outside, inside and out. Cybernetics offers a model of circular causation. Can you picture it? Wiener did. Which comes first, the cybernetic chicken or a golden egg? The answer, of course, is neither. Both are circularly caused, interactively, dynamically, reciprocally, not mechanically, but in information-governed energetic exchange. Not one way, but not always at once, either. Because when that happens, things lose their shape, liquefy, lose their distinction, their distinctiveness, their boundaries, like water spinning in water, or lovers embracing from the outside in. But orderly loops of communicative feedback control against such lovely, if dangerous, plays of chaos. As such, by making informational objects out of each other, ceaseless and circular cybernetic communicators alter the environments within which they and others energetically interact. Consider the information produced by a radar screen in communication with a human operator, two of the earliest subject objects to be wired into the teleelectronic circuitry of the cybernetic imagination. Here, Information is processed to calculate the adjustment on gun controls to improve aim. The effectiveness of the adjustments is observed and communication via radar, and then this new information is used again to readjust the aim of the gun, and so on. If the calculations are automated, one is dealing with a self-steering device, if not the whole system inducing the participating human beings can be viewed as a self-steering device. While situating the new science of cybernetics within the old sciences of war, Wiener simultaneously expressed horror at the contributions of other mathematicians, scientists, and engineers to the construction and use of nuclear weapons. Wiener was profoundly suspicious about structural complicities between elite scientific institutions and governmental military sources of funding. In 1941, he resigned from the National Academy of Science in protest. Soon thereafter, he withdrew completely from governmental and military-based service, never again to receive state funding for the production of knowledge. Indeed, throughout his subsequent career, Wiener operated somewhat doubly as both a scientist and ethical commentator on the practice of science. Still, the wartime successes of cybernetic technologies inspired Wiener and others to search for an ever-widening interface between command, control, and communication processes in a diverse array of mechanic, biological, and social systems. In pursuit of this interface, from 1946 to 1953, Wiener met regularly with John von Neumann, whose mathematical labors, unlike Wiener's, contributed directly to digital computations necessary for US military experiments with atomic weaponry against Japan, and other early cybernetics, in a series of intensive conferences on cybernetics. Also attending some of these sessions were leading figures of post-war social science: Margaret Mead, Talcott Parsons, Gregory Bateson, Kurt Lewin, and Robert K. Merton, among others. Overall, the Massey conferences sought to generate a new kind of link between engineering, biology, mathematics on one hand, and psychology, psychiatry, and all the social sciences on the other, and, in this, they succeeded, if not exactly in the blink of an eye, then exponentially and steadily over the last half century. Practical embodiments of the cybernetic worldview have spread to virtually all fields of power, knowledge, and culture. As such, boundaries have become blurred between once artificially separated areas of thought as more and more of the world is seen in terms of information. From a doctor's imagination of her patient to the CIA and IBM's imagination of its competitors and clients, and, maybe, even your imagination of me, vast flows of the world as we have come to know it over the last 50 years have been, ritually, coded and recoded as seemingly nothing but matters of information. Even the simplest of conversations are separated, reconfigured, sent and priced. And those who live in this new world are losing their grip on older, and other possible constructions of reality. As for those who have no access to, no participation in, this newly imposed world, they are forced out of the world's new information economy, doomed to obsolescence and death. Somewhere between a real and a militarized imaginary. Returning to Wiener's delirium, in 1950, the MIT mathematician declared, "It is the purpose of cybernetics is to develop a language and techniques that will enable us to indeed attack the problems of control and communications in general, It is important to note the militaristic resonances vibrating in Wiener's own phrasings. 2. Attack the problems of control and communications. Such resonances remain deeply entrenched within contemporary social cybernetics. Adapt or you're toast. Moreover, given the omnipresence of cybernetic control mechanisms across a wide range of contemporary institutions, it is vital to remember the ritual origins of this logic and its limits. Haraway draws attention to the relationship between cybernetics and the militaristic economy of capitalist patriarchy out of which it has evolved. Conceptualizing the logic of cybernetics as a powerful theoretical fiction which forecloses other ways of making sense of the world, Haraway, like Wiener, traces the roots of this ideology to the labor of interdisciplinary teams of government-funded researchers during and after the Second World War. Indeed, the extraordinary organization of scientists in the war effort in Britain and the United States through biologists together with engineers, linguists, physicists, mathematicians, and administrators in intense activity that had profound consequences for both the conceptual and practical reorganization of sciences, such as biology, and for the management of everyday socio-economic systems as well. Haraway's work points us to a particular social scene, a series of white male-dominated research settings organized around the demands of hot and cold war, a theater of perpetual war it seems. Within this theater, command-control systems, called animal societies and populations, came to be known through technical, theoretical and practical procedures that, sacrificially, acknowledged natural, technical objects as problems in military strategy, industrial production, in which the worker is a system component whose error rates must be controlled by information and resource management, in psychiatric management of overloaded, stress communicative systems, and in engineered design of automated control systems. Ever, having once failed as a concept, is being reinvented. Information is the ultimate mediation lever. Light doesn't travel through space, it is information that travels through information, at a heavy price. Consider, for instance, the electrifying ideas of information theorist Conrad Hal Waddington. Waddington sought to model information flows in relation to differentially constrictive boundaries of energy. In so doing, he facilitated a general transference of methods associated with operations research in military organizations to the emergent field of molecular biology, where a new image of the body as an information and communications system was already beginning to take hold. In this regard, it is crucial to recognize that Waddington himself developed his ideas in feedback with a program of wartime research, sponsored by the Royal British Air Force Operations Research Section and aimed at countering the effectivity of German U-boats. Waddington theorized life as basically a problem in sublime military gamesmanship. In this deadly and delirious game, as Waddington figured it, bodily life itself was imagined as little but a battlefield constructed around and between flows of energy and information. This is also evident in the language of W. Ross Ashby, an early theorist and popularizer of cybernetics. According to Ashby, the inborn characteristics of living organisms are simply the strategies that have been found satisfactory over centuries of competition and built into the young animal so as to be ready for use at the first demand. Just as so many players have found PQ4 a good way of opening a game of chess, So many species found growth teeth to be a good way of opening the battle of life. If this sounds a bit like a delirious replay of Herbert Spencer's imperial sociological rhetoric of survival of the fittest, this should be no surprise to those familiar with the social cybernetics advanced by longtime Harvard sociologist, Talcott Parsons. Parsons' functionalist theories dominated U.S. sociological thinking throughout the 1950s and early 1960s. Moreover, Parsons' vision of society as a communicative social system represented an explicit synthesis of Spencer's thesis concerning adaptative societal evolution and recent developments in the science of cybernetics. Parsons pictured human subjects as behavioral organisms whose communicative actions were guided by a cybernetic system located mainly in the central nervous system, which operates through several intermediary mechanisms to control the metabolic processes of the organism and the behavioral use of its physical facilities, such as the motions of limbs. Indeed, for Parsons, the same basic principle of cybernetic hierarchy, where information communicatively commands the expenditure of energy, and the reverse, was said to be the fundamental basis for classifying the components of social systems. Of particular importance was the communicative role of money as a cybernetic mechanism at the symbolic cultural level, capable of integrating instrumental economic action within the total society as a system. Parsons used the term cybernetic hierarchy of control to describe the orderly adjustment of rationally evolving social systems. In this sense, Parsons' cybernetic functionalism combines Spencer's evolutionary viewpoint with ideas about adjustive feedback drawn from mid-20th century biology. In Parsons' own words, his ideas about the evolution of social systems in their entirety coincided with a set of developments within biological theory and in general science, notably the new genetics and cybernetic theory, which indicated a far greater continuity between human socio-cultural evolution and that of the organic world than had been previously widely appreciated. Parsons visualized a communicative exchange between information and energy as a core steering mechanism underlying evolutionary social development. One source of change may be excesses in either information or energy in the exchange among action systems. In turn, these excesses alter the informational or energetic outputs across systems and within any system. For example, excesses of motivation, energy, would have consequences for the enactment of roles or the normative structure and eventually of cultural value orientations. Another source of change comes from an insufficient supply of either energy or information, again causing external and internal readjustments in the structure of action systems. If Parsons' seemingly neutral depiction of social change as a genetic-like mechanism of coded communicative adjustment appears inattentive to the sacrificial exigencies of human historical struggles over the shaping of power, perhaps this is because Parsons tautologically defines power as but the capacity of a social system to mobilize resources to attain collective goals. This ignores the effects of historically rooted social hierarchies and the struggles of people oppressed by unequal power. This shift to a cybernetic concept of power signals a grand reversal in sociological understandings of the relation culture and economy and between categories of power and capital. This represents an institutionally guided descent into a virtual reality where all the reference from money and power to health and intelligence become coded as if pure cybernetic processes. Belief in the saving authority of science and loss of belief in the authority of tradition, time compresses into space, then the reverse. In favor of the then just emerging conceptions of cybernetic control, Parsons was also a Kantian thinker who shared the idealist philosopher's dilemma concerning the difficulties of claiming universal knowledge from a strictly phenomenal point of view, and while Kant solved this dilemma by attending to the disembodied genius of sublime aesthetics, Parsons' cybernetic solution was of a related sort. Like Kantian thought, Christian metaphysics and ultra-modern warfare, cybernetics too is guided by an underlying compulsion to aesthetics. In this, the new genetic biology of combinants and recombinants contributes, analogically, it is true, but in the specific sense of structural similitude, to an interpretation of power as a site of battle between genetic inheritance, the categorical imperative, and the empirical range of variations, the phenomenal world, here the body appears to disappear behind a coded screen of symbols, at long last, and during a Cold War no less, the word of certain men takes its place as more originary than flesh and moreover everlasting. 35 In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh, states John's Gospel, reducing bodily energies to that which is vocation by information. Cybernetics makes the same assumption. So does ultra-modern capital, digitized sacrifice, delirious flows, kitty cats, missiles and me. What, or who, is left out of the picture of the world we are in when the world itself is portrayed as if nothing but pure cybernetic processes? And what haunts this most powerful of late 20th century theoretical fictions? The answer, according to Norbert Wiener, is the evil of chaos, the noise of disorganized forms and the entropic erosion of workable boundaries between subject-objects in communicative flux. To better understand this, as well as the dominant tendencies within cybernetic control mechanisms, let us return to Wiener's own statement of his theoretical bodily delirium. Wiener informs us that his anxiety was sparked by an inability, prompted by the onset of bronchopneumonia, to make clear distinctions between symbols and the objects they represented, an inability to distinguish between words and things. It was impossible, he suggests, to distinguish among my pain and difficulty in breathing, the flapping of the window curtain, and certain as yet unresolved points on the potential problem on which I was working. More disturbing was the cybernetician's inability to say whether this pain revealed itself as a mathematical tension or whether this mathematical tension was somehow symbolizing itself in the pain he embodied. Unable to clearly discern meaningful feedback about such matters because the two were united too closely to make such a separation possible, Wiener worries about the randomness which overturns his search for knowledge. Indeed, it appears that almost any experience may act as a temporary symbol for a mathematical situation which has not yet been organized and cleared up. In reflecting upon this delirious moment, Weimer grasps one of the chief motives which drives him toward cybernetics, the need to reduce an unresolved discord to semi-permanent and recognizable terms. Weimer's biographer Steve Himes agrees, observing at the core of the cybermathematician's personal and theoretical passions an obsession with finding predictability through chaos or signal through noise, but this was a difficult task for Weimer. Convinced as he was by the theoretical vision of quantum physics, suggesting ongoing transformations between even the most seemingly solid of matters and the dynamic waves of energy which solid-state particles only temporarily congeal and contain, Weimer sought, through refinements of Gibbsian, non-linear, statistical computations, to provide a flexible mathematical basis for quantum mechanics, and through the communicative imagery of cybernetics provide a dynamic medium for mapping the transformative interactions which bind and unbind energy within always only relatively predictable material boundaries. In this, Weimer imagined himself advancing beyond Einstein's theories of relativity. From the cybernetic viewpoint, Einstein's ideas, like Newton's, remained burdened with absolutely rigid dynamics, not introducing the idea of probability. Gibbs' work, on the other hand, is probabilistic from the very start, yet both directions represent a shift in the point of view of physics in which the world as it actually is replaced in some sense or other by the world as it happens to be observed. In truth, Weimer sought to reformulate Einstein's position, suggesting that, in his theory of relativity, it is impossible to introduce the observer without also introducing the ideal message, while clearly an advantage over the Newtonian subordination of everything to fixed matter and mechanics. Einstein's reliance on observer-mediated measures of one-way optical radiation, from sender to receiver, limited the radicality of his theoretical discoveries. Weimer argued that Einstein's physics closely paralleled Leibniz's pre-Newtonian notions of a lively universe of monads in optical, space-time distorted, communication with each other. This paralleled Leibniz's own visual theoretical fascinations with mechanical clock-like automata. For Leibniz, the temporal concordance of these little dancing machines set in motion at the same point in time suggested a pre-established harmony of monads signaling to each other. Here, as in Einstein's image of light traveling from source to receiver, the little figures which dance on the top of a music box move in accordance with a pattern. But it is a pattern which is set in advance. Weimer's cybernetic view of physics suggested something more indeterminate and energetically interactive, whereas Einstein's light waves and Leibniz's dancing figures display no trace of communication with the outer world, except one-way communication guided by a pre-established mechanism. The movement of things in the world in which Weimer found himself communicating appeared more complex both computationally and ontologically. This complex world Weimer shared with moderately intelligent animals, such as cute little kittens. Meow, meow. I call to the kitten and it looks up. I have sent a message which it has received by its sensory organs, and it registers in action. The kitten is hungry and lets out a painful wail. Pain again. Hum. Yes, pain seems a repeated feature of Weimer's cybernetic delirium. Whose pain dart? The kitten bats at a swinging spool. This time it is the sender of a message. The spool swings to its left, and the kitten catches it with its left paw. This time messages of a very complicated nature are both sent and received within the kitten's own nervous system through nerve end bodies in its joints, muscles, and tendons, and by means of nervous messages sent by the organs. The animal is aware of the actual position and tensions of its tissues. It is only through these organs that anything like a manual skill is possible. But accompanying Wiener and his hungry cyber kitten is another kind of complex communicator, a new generation of flexible automata, the mathematical configuration of which underscored the inadequacy of Einstein's and Leibniz's lingering optic mechanical rigidities. Unlike the older automata, which operated according to pre-programmed clockwork, these new cybernetic machines, and believe me there are more, each moment are characterized as feedback-driven automata, possessing sensor organ functions as well, taping memory and translation comparison capacities. This makes them interactively flexible in their command, control, and communicative capabilities. In 1950, Wiener included among their number the controlled missile, the proximity fuse, the automatic door opener, the controller apparatus for a chemical factory, the rest of the modern armory of automatic machines which perform military or industrial functions. I mention this hardly innocent of the machines through which I myself am sending messages to you, both the real ones and the imaginary. In Wiener's cybernetic story, all these machines face a common enemy: entropy, chaotic disorganization, or noise, the villain of the second law of thermodynamics. Against this enemy, Wiener pits the informational effectivity of commanding communicative feedback. This facilitates the erection of a temporarily closed system, a local enclave against chaos, whose direction seems opposed to that of the universe at large, and in which there is a limited and temporary tendency for organization to increase. 41. But over time entropy increases, and all closed systems in the universe tend naturally to deteriorate and lose their distinctiveness as they move from what Gibson statistics discerns as the least to the most probable state, from a state of organization and differentiation in which distinctions and forms exist, to a state of chaos and sameness. But having stated this, Wiener then makes a delirious leap from physics to a death-defying onto theology, connecting the counter-entropic vocation of cybernetics to the writings of Saint Augustine. This, perhaps, is the most problematic aspect of Wiener's work, for by linking the mission of his new science with the moral vision of Augustine, Wiener's writings suggest a dangerous temptation within cybernetics to subordinate finite and relational bodily matters to the infinitely commanding and abstract sign, work of the soul, whose soul, in this philosophical aspect of Wiener's work, cybernetics becomes a moral science fitted to do battle against its evil archenemy, disorganization. This enemy, Wiener asserts, is not the Manichaean devil with its crafty tricks of dissimulation, but the Augustinian devil, which is not a power in itself, but the measure of our own weakness. But the Augustinian devil is stupid, and while it plays a difficult game of passive resistance to orderly communicative coding, swamping informational messages with the noise of unbounded energy, it is also a devil defeated by a rigorous cybernetic intelligence as thoroughly as by the sprinkle of holy water. Here it is important to recall, even though Wiener makes no mention of this, that one of the most arresting aspects of Augustine's theology is its fierce and vehement expression of hatred for the flesh of women, and for pagans. But Wiener mentions only Augustine's hatred of chaos, which he transcodes as a life-preserving pursuit of clearly bounded flows of communicative feedback. In Augustine's writings, chaos is figured in seductive and pagan feminine forms, evil forms. Pagan woman as chaos. Pagan woman as evil. Pagan woman as gateway to the devil. This is a figure to be combated by closing the finite eye of the masculine flesh, all the while opening inwardly into an infinite mirror, a play of perfect Trinitarian three-in-one identity, perfectly the same and yet simultaneously different, a perfectly informed communicative erasure of difference. This is also a fantasy of timeless self-perpetuation, pure autopoiesis, pure simultaneity, pure information. It is infinitely easier to imagine, as is the case with both Augustine and Wiener, when no mother is involved, or when the only mother involved is a fleshless, holy ghostly info mother, Marbel or whoever. No noise, no sin. Wiener deliriously imagines cybernetics as a holy scientific weapon which uses the study of communicative feedback loops to both uncover and exorcise entropic noise. In this, he converts the little, counter-entropic, demons of Clerk Maxwell's 19th century science into the informational angels guiding our own, as gatekeepers regulating the useful flow of otherwise ethereal energies. Maxwell's demons seem to overcome the tendency of entropy to increase within defined communicative locales, but in sacrificially carving out protected pockets of organization, these demons simultaneously threw the wider universe into disequilibrium. This is because neither humans nor other communicators ever truly exist in isolated systems. We take in food, which generates energy, from the outside, and we are, as a result, parts of the larger world which contains those sources of our vitality. The same holds for Wiener's cybernetic angels, watching at the tele-electronic doors of communicative feedback, securing the boundaries of some worlds against others, digitally transcoding energy into information. But at what or whose expense? This was a question Wiener continuously posed to himself and other cyberneticians, and with good reason. After all, Wiener's own work was situated within a very specific local enclave, the military-industrial scientific web of Cold War capitalist America. This enclave was fighting, and in large measure with information, not merely against entropy in general, but against historical and material resistances to the systematic exploitation of the energies of others, as well as against tendencies for the rate of exploitative profit to fall. Wiener's ethical vigilance about such matters initially inspired reflexive and critical scholars, such as Gregory Bateson, Anthony Wilden, Heinz von Forrester, and Stafford Beers, to make use of cybernetic imagery and techniques in struggling for a more just and ecologically sane order of things. Power-sensitive cybernetic or cyborg imagery is also politically configured in the writings of numerous contemporary writers, some of whom appear in this book. But, I feel, for worse more than better, Wiener's cybernetic delirium, as well as his Augustinian search for closed systems, are today most materially embodied, for exploitative profit and control, within the dominant military, cultural institutions of corporate capital worldwide. 48. But this is less to dismiss cybernetics than to caution a reflexive, collective, and historically informed socio-economic engagement with the somewhat hypnagogic, almost dreamy, loops of televisionary feedback, which today interacts so thoroughly with so much of our everyday lives. How, then, to effectively double back upon such psychosocial scenes of sacrifice, so as to better notice, communicate, and simultaneously expel the unjust and sickening flow of the energies these informational forms bind and those they exile, deplete, or deaden? The answers to this question are neither simple nor singular. They depend also on the feedback we give and receive from one another. Having said all this, I leave you with a final bit of feedback from Norbert Wiener, and I wish you good cyborg dreams. In discussing his own free-flowing attempts to make imaginative theoretical sense of the simultaneous aspect of a problem, Wiener directs attention to certain moments when key aspects of the solution begin to crystallize. Very often these moments seem to arise on waking, but probably this really means that sometime during the night I have undergone the process of deconfusion which is necessary to establish my ideas. I'm quite certain that at least part of this process can take place during what would ordinarily be described as sleep and, in the form of a dream, it is probably more usual for it to take place in the so-called hypnoidal state in which one is awaiting sleep, and it is closely associated with those hypnagogic images which have some of the sensory solidity of hallucinations but which, unlike hallucinations, may be manipulated more or less at will. The main ideas are not yet sufficiently differentiated to make a recourse to symbolism easy and natural. They furnish a sort of improvised symbolism which may carry one through the stages until an ordinary symbolism becomes more possible and appropriate. What remains to be done is very often the casting aside of those aspects that are not germane to the solution. Stephen Fole, author of the text which I have just read, is the author of the culture textbook, Death at the Parasite Cafe, a video maker and performing artist. He is professor of sociology at Boston College. The Cybernetic Delirium of Norbert Wiener will appear in the forthcoming book of essays entitled Digital Delirium.
Been listening to the program Human Machine on WGXC. Listen on Saturday mornings to subsequent episodes where we continue our conversation on the nature of being in an age of human machine evolution.